Pediatric Care for West Virginia's Children, and by the West Virginia Center for End-of-Life Care, reminding West Virginians that Healthcare Decisions Week is from April 16th through April 22nd. More information at wvendoflife.org. Coming up next, it's West Virginia Morning.
It's 7:41 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Herbert Hoover High School principal Mike Kelly lauds his boys' basketball team.
I think that's one of the reasons, in addition to it being our first state championship team, I think that's one of the reasons that the community's so excited about it, because they kind of embody what the community has gone through.
What they went through was a 1,000-year flood. The story coming up on this West Virginia morning after this news.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Indeed.com, used by over 3 million businesses for hiring, where business owners and HR professionals can post job openings, then review candidates, take notes, and schedule interviews from an online dashboard. Learn more at Indeed.com. From ADT Security, helping to protect families and homes for over 140 years. Learn more at ADT.com. And from the William T. Grant Foundation, at WTGrantFoundation.org.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. A bill that sparked some debate in the Senate has made its way to the House of Delegates. It would make changes to the West Virginia Workplace Freedom Act or the state's right to work law. Liz McCormick reports.
The debate over whether West Virginia should be the 26th right-to-work state began during last year's legislative session. Right-to-work laws make it illegal to require a worker in a union shop to pay union dues and fees if he or she is not a member. Unions argue that worker, however, is still benefiting from the contract negotiations the union pays for, without contributing to the cost. Last year's right-to-work bill brought on heated debates in both chambers, but ultimately passed. The legislation was vetoed by then-Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, but both the House and Senate overrode the veto, and the bill became law. Right-to-work was challenged in court by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the state's largest workers' union. Last month, a Kanawha County judge deemed the right-to-work bill unconstitutional, and the decision could end up in the state's Supreme Court. Senate Bill 330, which was on third reading in the House Thursday, seeks to clean up the language the judge saw as unconstitutional. Delegate Scott Brewer, a Democrat from Mason County and a former construction worker, spoke in opposition to the bill.
Why does this body want to jeopardize the ability of our industry partners, private business, to shake hands with private organizations and enter into an agreement that provides everything we need for these industries? Senate Bill 330 simply requires unions and labor organizations to spend their resources on people that won't pay. That's what this is about. Spend your resources on people that will not pay.
Brewer was the only member of the body to speak to the bill. However, the vote was close. It passed 52 to 48 and now heads back to the Senate. Members of the House quickly approved 12 additional bills during their floor session Thursday. One of those was House Bill 2522. It would enter West Virginia into an agreement with other states to allow nurses to practice across state lines without having to get multiple licenses. The compact includes both registered nurses and licensed practical nurses. Delegate Jordan Hill, a Republican from Nicholas County, works in the Human Resources Department for his local hospital, and he spoke in favor of the bill.
I often find myself hiring numerous travel nurses at our local hospital monthly to fill vacancies that we cannot fill with West Virginia nurses because of our shortage in the Mountain State. The current system of duplicative licensure and nurses practicing in multiple states, and it's cumbersome and redundant for both nurses and states. We have an opportunity right now to step up to the plate and improve health care in rural West Virginia and across the state.
In the House's Judiciary Committee, representatives of licensed practical nurses expressed concerns over the Nurse Licensure Compact, arguing it wouldn't resolve the state's nursing shortage, but allow LPNs from out of state to take jobs from West Virginians. Despite concerns, House Bill 2522 passed out of the chamber on a unanimous vote. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick at the State House.
It's been about 55 days since President Donald Trump was sworn into office. That means we're a little over halfway through a project called 100 Days in Appalachia. The Digital Journalism Project is following the first days of the Trump administration and its impact on Appalachia. One of the editors and contributors to the project, Dave Mistich, recently sat down with Inside Appalachia host Jessica Lilly for this update.
I think we're bringing in a wide swath of stories. Covering everything from during the first weekend of the inauguration, some women's marches that were going on in Pittsburgh. We're also hearing from people in the region down in Tennessee that heavily supported Donald Trump. This past weekend, during the March for Trump rallies that were going on around the country, there were a lot of folks out in Tennessee marching in support of the president. To read those stories, to get more into it, I think we're learning a lot, at least I am, and I think the audience is too, about different parts of the world in Appalachia and different worlds inside of Appalachia and how they're different than what, you know, the wider world might perceive it to be.
One thing we learned from the last presidential election is just how important social media and other digital platforms are when it comes to public opinion. In general, the public a lot of times doesn't necessarily know the difference between an opinion piece, an op-ed piece, and for that matter, dare I say it, the difference between biased news and fake news. How has this project addressed this issue?
Well, one of the things that we've done, or at least tried to do, is label any sort of op-ed or any sort of column as such. You know, whenever we post that material to social media, Facebook, Twitter, we also try to go out of our way to make sure that it's evident there, too. Op-eds can have facts in them as well, too. That platform, of course, is trying to reinforce a particular opinion or a particular perspective, which is nothing wrong with that. We're just trying to go out of our way to make sure that those opinions, even if they are based in fact, are labeled as such.
How do you bring balance to that type of presentation on your website? Has it been challenging?
You know, I think it has been. I mean, I think if you look at national media, you know, the Washington Post, the New York Times, and other major news outlets, they've been very critical of Donald Trump. I think that, you know, obviously in national media, there's been a lot of attention and a lot of criticism towards this administration. But what I think, you know, others in media are doing as well right now is highlighting those that have supported the president and trying to understand their reasons why and hold this presidency and this administration accountable. You know, Trump country as the coal community or the coal community as Trump country narrative has certainly played out big time, you know, long before the election ever took place. But I think that there's a more diverse group of people that supported the president here in West Virginia and across Appalachia that we haven't heard from. And one of the things I'm working on personally is trying to find people that maybe aren't that stereotypical or that predicted sort of set of folks that's been, you know, laid out in other coverage thus far.
According to the website, one of the goals was to take a closer look at just what makes this region such a flashpoint for so many of the social, economic, and political fractures in American communities. Can you make any observations so far about what you're finding is the answer to this really complex question?
I mean, I think you just said it. It is a really complex question. I don't know that it can be accomplished in 100 days. I don't know that answering that question could happen in a year or 2 years, or maybe even a decade. But I think that it's worth looking at. I mean, you take a look at the, for example, the opioid crisis that's stricken Appalachia, particularly West Virginia. You know, that started, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, and now is playing out in the rest of the country. So if you really take a look at Appalachia and take a look at America as a whole, it doesn't take long to figure out why a lot of these issues that have bubbled up around the country have sort of manifested themselves either first or in ways that were able to be understood in a place like Appalachia.
Is there anything specifically that is coming out of the Trump administration that is just expected to impact or is impacting the region pretty significantly?
Well, I mean, one of the things that, you know, his big promise, especially to West Virginia, that it was going to bring coal jobs back. We've heard some reports in the region of that happening. You know, I think people are a little, some people are quick to point to him as the reason for that happening. Others are quick to say that he's not. You know, the stream protection rule rollback and other environmental regulations. I think that that's what we've seen most out of Appalachia. I think the Affordable Care Act is another issue that's affected Appalachians and particularly West Virginians. As most people realize, West Virginia is one of the states that takes advantage of the Affordable Care Act and various offers like Medicaid expansion more than a lot of other states in the country. You know, issues of healthcare and the economy as it relates to coal are certainly on people's radar. It remains to be seen what happens in the latter half of this first 100 days.
That was Dave Mistich, editor and contributor for the digital journalism project called 100 Days in Appalachia. You can hear this interview and more about what a Donald Trump presidency means for the region on the next episode of Inside Appalachia. Listen right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting, Sunday mornings at 7 and Sunday evenings at 6. Last June, devastating floods damaged homes, businesses, and schools across southern West Virginia. One of the hardest hit areas was Clendenin, home to Herbert Hoover High School, which did not reopen for the 2017-2018 school year. Instead, Hoover shares a building with Elkview Middle School. The middle school attends in the morning and the high school in the afternoon. But despite these odds, Hoover's varsity basketball team made it to the Sweet 16 state tournament for the first time in the school's history. Kara Lofton reports.
On the far side of the Charleston Civic Center, about 1,000 blue and red clad supporters scream their support. Many are wearing shirts emblazoned with the hashtag RiverStrong on the back. For these supporters, tonight is as much about showing a community of resilience as celebrating a team making history.
I think the one thing that people need to know is, okay, we got flooded, we lost our high school, our kids are going to a half a day school, cramming as many core classes as they can into a certain period of time, practicing basketball in the YMCA, and these kids have not missed a beat.
That's Joey Robertson, father of Hoover Jr. Gavin Robertson.
The one thing I learned through all this is just how resilient students can be and just roll with the punches. If it happened to me, or well, when it did happen, I was devastated. I mean, here you don't have a high school, what's your kid going to do? But our kids in our community, they're just resilient. They rolled with it, haven't let it get them down.
Hoover was undoubtedly the underdog, but star of the game was senior Chase King.
Looking back last year with all the seniors that we lost, and then over the summer, you know, when we lost our school, it was really hard to picture any success this season.
Both King and Coach Josh Daniels say what makes this team different is how hard the team worked both in and out of season.
This is probably the toughest bunch of guys that's ever came through the Elk River. I mean, just so much heart comes through this program, and it's all thanks to these guys.
Back on the court, King and the rest of the Huskies are battling it out against Fairmont. It's a tough slog for them. Fairmont is big, fast, and strong, and the Polar Bears get a couple points early in the game. At times, it seems like the Huskies may be on the path toward clawing their way back at just 5 or 6 points behind. But as the game progresses, the Polar Bears begin to build more of a lead. And then it's over, Fairmont 59, Hoover 39. For Hoover principal Michael Kelly, just getting to the state tournament is a testament to the tenacity and resilience of this group of boys, though.
I think this team, I think that's one of the reasons, in addition to it being our first state championship team, I think that's one of the reasons that the community's so excited about it, because they kind of embody what the community has gone through.
And that they are River Strong. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Kara Lofton.
On this week's brand new Mountain Stage broadcast, West Virginia super pickers Johnny Statz and Robert Shaver return with a new self-released record in tow titled Music from the Mountains. Featuring this upbeat performance, here they are with the Mountain Stage Song of the Week. Statz and Robert Shaver with El Cubanchero. You can hear this song again and more music Saturday night at 8 on Mountain Stage, right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glennis Boer, Dave Mistich, Roxy Todd, Liz McCormick, Carol Lofton, and Ann Lee. Our news director is Jesse Wright. Our music is by Matt Jackford. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.
This is West Virginia Public Broadcasting, WVPB Charleston, WVBY Beckley, WVBL Bluefield, WVPW Buchanan, WVW